Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile, November until
good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Andrew Dwan, kind of the reunion of the midweek crew. The three of us in combination won't be on a given show because there's going to be a new alignment, but we will go forward with tonight's show. On the docket, we will talk about Dustin Pedroia's retirement being announced this week. We're going to talk about the Nolan Arenado trade, and we will wrap it up with just some thoughts on the MLB season starting, you know, and what the, you know, the implications are about that and some of the dominoes that will fall because of that. So, how are you, gentlemen?
Doing pretty well. I'm certainly doing better than Rockies fans at the moment. Not a good time to be out in Colorado right now. Oh, man.
Well, 2020 was, you know, we got a taste of what it's like to be Rockies fans. Knowing we were going to watch other teams.
we certainly did.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Andrew would know better, but I mean, Colorado seems like a fun atmosphere to watch a game. You know,
it's a blast. No, none of the fans go there for the game anyways.
It's for the alcohol.
And, you know, I think exactly. If we had the weather that you guys are having back east right now, coupled with that Arenado trade, maybe people would be jumping off. Well, we don't have many bridges out here, doing something weird. But it's been sunny and 70 the last couple of days. So that's eased the blow for all like 36 fans that the Rockies have.
The Arenado situation kind of seemed like a hostage situation to me. You know, he's screaming to get out of there because he wants to win so bad, and he can't because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, obstacles. And so he's a free man.
Yeah, he is. And I'm that's the weird thing. Like, the fans are happy for him. No one's even mad. They're just like, they understand how pathetic the ownership and GM situation is out here. And they're just happy for him to have a chance at, you know, making the playoffs out in St. Louis. I really do feel bad for the loyalist fans that have been going to the game since the 90s. It sucks to know that you're probably never going to be competitive. You're never going to sign a free agent, and your hometown talent, they're going to go away as soon as the contract's up. They pretty much said as much today with Trevor Story. They said they weren't going to trade him, but they're, in so many words, pretty much said this is his last year here.
They'll trade him.
I hope they do. They'd be dumb not to.
I know. They just got to do it in doses. But we'll get more into that, in the middle segment. But big news this week for Red Sox fans didn't really come as a surprise. It was expected before spring training that Dustin Pedroia would officially retire, from baseball, not having played. I think he played, maybe one or two games in 2019 before a setback. And I think he tried to make a comeback in the 2020 offseason. He was working out for one, but then had another setback as well. So we're gonna attack this segment from different sides of the spectrum, but I'll let you guys go first, reflect on, not only his retirement, but his career and whatnot. Go ahead, Jason. Why don't you lead off?
So I've always loved Pedroia as a player. I thought that he was exactly what separated Red Sox from Yankees in my mind. Like, the kind of players that we developed here and that we won with were so different than the Yankees. Like, Pedroia versus Robinson Cano. Cano was all about flash and, I'm going to look like I'm half asleep, but, I'll look at my slick glove and I'm so cool and, whatever. And Pedroia was like, he would step on the field and his jersey was already dirty. Like, that's just the kind of guy that he wanted to be. That's the kind of player he wanted to be. And he was awesome to watch. It was really frustrating. I'll never forget his first month up in the majors. I hated him. I was like, man, this guy sucks. What are we doing? Like, send him down, get rid of him. This guy can't hit. Like, I was so frustrated with him, and I'm so glad that they stuck with him because he figured it out. He ended up winning Rookie of the Year and the MVP that year. Although I will say, probably shouldn't have won the MVP. That was a little bit kind of an easygoing MVP year, but still, he earned it. He deserves it. Multi-time Gold Glover. I always thought that he was the best defensive second baseman of his class, of his generation. I don't care what anyone says about Cano. He was always better than Cano in the field. Cano was the better hitter. He had more power in his prime, and he was the overall better hitter. But Pedroia was such a better defender and such a harder worker and harder player than Cano ever was. So I really enjoyed watching him play. The last couple of years have been really frustrating because he just couldn't get on the field. And we all saw this day coming. I think we all saw this coming like 2 years ago. In 2018, when he just could not step on the field, he played three games that year. Like, it was, and even in those three games, he just looked at him and like he just couldn't move the same. He didn't look right, and we all just kind of knew it was like, all right, dude, you're done. It's over, And unfortunately, Pedroia suffers from sort of the same thing that like Chris Sale does, where when he's hurt and he has to rehab, he must be a doctor's worst nightmare, because the doctors will tell him, dude, You have to sit, you have to sit still and not do anything for 3 weeks. And someone like Pedroia or Chris Sale, someone with that mentality, they don't want to do that. He wants to push his way back as soon as he can. And I don't know, I'm not speculating. I don't know if he did that. And, that's what caused the setbacks. It might just be that his knee was just completely destroyed. But, we all knew this was coming. As a player, in terms of his on the field, the way he performed, I loved it. Some of the stuff in the clubhouse I did not love. I thought that he did not look good after the Manny Machado incident, where he was at the top of the dugout steps telling Manny Machado, no, I'm not telling them to throw at you. They're doing it. I thought that was a really low moment in his career. I know people will disagree, but he looked really bad there. And keep in mind, this was after David Ortiz had retired. So the Red Sox were kind of searching for that next clubhouse leader. And everyone said, it should be Dustin Pedroia. He's been here so long. He's kind of the longstanding veteran. Now it should be him. And he had that. He had his first shot 2017 when that all happened. And he failed. He did not look like a leader there. He looked like a guy who would rather just sort of, pass the buck and not deal with it. Whereas Ortiz would have stormed out to that field and grabbed Machado by the throat. It's such a stark contrast. But so I didn't love the clubhouse stuff. I didn't love the way he picked on Bobby V when he was here. I know we all hated Bobby V he was an awful manager, but it felt like Pedroia really took that to a new extreme and like just really wouldn't, you know, wouldn't let that guy have the time of day. So I won't forget that stuff, but at the end of the day, he's still going to go down as one of my favorite athletes that's played here. I hope they retire his number. He's not a baseball Hall of Famer in my mind, but he should be a Red Sox Hall of Famer. Especially if, you know, I said it earlier this week, if you're going to put Wade Boggs' number up there, which is a joke and a sham, then Pedroia should be up there. So hopefully he gets that honor. I don't know what's next for him. I wouldn't mind seeing him hang around, maybe do some minor league coaching. I think he'd be a great minor league coach, or just something working with younger guys, I think would be great for him. So hopefully they keep him around and they let him do that, because I do think that his way of playing baseball, like it's hard. Not everyone can do it. Not everyone can hold up doing it, but there's so few guys left that are like that. And hopefully he can pass some of that knowledge on. So hope the best for him, you know, loved him as a player, pissed me off a few times, but ultimately really good guy. And it's just a shame it had to end that way.
Stole a little bit of my thunder, but yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, in terms of what Jason just said about his toughness and his comeback attempts, let me put it this way. Dustin Pedroia is a hockey fan's favorite baseball player. Because, you know, you see these guys, like, you look at the box score or the injury list. It's like, oh, he's out with a broken nail. It's like, no, Pedroia's out here hobbling on one knee, knowing that if he, like, turns too quickly, that thing is just going to – his knee's going to blow up like an atom bomb. And, yeah, every day he was rehabbing. He was trying to get back. And you had to admire him for that. He was talking about – playing second base, how he knew early on that every single play was potentially his last. It's arguably the most dangerous position in the game. Guys are sliding into your knees. Nowadays, not so much, but when he was still, you know, early, you know, late 20 before 2010s and early 2010s, people were still going in hard to second, and he was staying in every single time to take that flip and then throw it over to first. And he was putting his body on the line for the team, and he wasn't missing many games unless, you know, he was physically unable to walk. So I admire him for it. I love Pedroia. Some of the plays that he made, I kind of forgot about some. But then you were seeing these highlight clips, and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that one where I want to say it was Devin Marrero overthrew first base down in Arlington in late in the game, and he dove, barehanded the ball off a ricochet, and in one motion while diving, threw out whoever the hell it was in Texas going back to first when he was caught rounding it. Like, you can't teach that. I don't care how many skills you have. Like a guy like Robbie Cano, you might look like a natural at it, but you can't teach that. That's amazing. It's like a guy that can go over the middle in football every single play, get a hit, get hit in the head, and get back up, get you a first down on the next play again. I do think that some of the, like, he should have walked away things are a little overblown. The guy was balancing work and family, which I think he deserves plenty of credit for. He said he couldn't even hang out with his kids, couldn't rebound for his kids. He coached his son's Little League game for an hour and then had to ice his knee the rest of the day and couldn't stand. He is fully dedicated to everything he does in life. And I don't think we're going to see a player like that come through the Red Sox system again. If we do, it's a once in every 25 years kind of situation. So I was glad that we got to see it, that I got to see it. And I wish him the best. I do. I mean, I would love to see him hang around the organization, but I hope he spends time with his family and just lives his life to the fullest.
I, as many people know on social media, I'm the unofficial president of the Dustin Pedroia Haters Fan Club, you know, and I was with David Price as well. But I didn't always hate Dustin Pedroia. You go back to the 2007 playoffs, I did a poll where I asked everybody what their favorite World Series was, and 2007 came in last. And to me, that was a fun World Series because Pedroia had a big month. So did Ellsbury. It was like a breath of fresh air. And it was just a fun month. And Pedroia, I think, had a home run in one of the World Series games that was in Colorado.
Jeff Francis.
Yeah. That was in Coors, wasn't it?
I think that one was Fenway.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Fenway? It was.
He got to Coors. Security wouldn't let him in. And they're like, who are you? He's like, ask Jeff Francis what my fucking name is. I just ended their season. Like, that is badass. You can't. That is okay. The stuff of legends.
So, you know, Pedroia, you know, big month. And, you know, I was a Pedroia fan at that point. And I'm not going to blame him for beer and chicken, but he was on that team, you know, and that, you know, that wasn't a good, you know, situation, you know, for the Red Sox that year. And then that gets Francona fired. And then the Bobby Valentine year, and Jason, you know, brought up some of it. You know, it started off with the useless comments from Bobby V. Dustin Pedroia blows up, calls out Bobby V publicly. And I can't really blame Pedroia for that. I don't think that should have been the way they went about it, but that's how it went down. And, you know, so be it. And then the rest of the season played out. They were essentially a last place team. There was some bizarre incidents throughout the summer. There was like a team meeting where a text message got sent from Adrian Gonzalez's phone, but supposedly Kelly Shopik sent the text message, and it was to, you know, to arrange a meeting with ownership, and details of that got leaked out. And apparently Bobby V, they all wanted him fired, but then all the players came out a few days later and said, no, that's not what it was about. And and then you had the weird situation where Bobby V was like face down on his desk, Pedroia, and someone took a selfie, you know, Valentine.
That's and hilarious. Come on.
It is in a way, but, you know, when you want your team to start playing better, you know, those antics aren't helping. And Dustin Pedroia didn't lose me in 2012, but I was like, I kind of started to sour on him a little bit, you know, and it was an ugly season for everyone involved. And the worst of everybody was on display that year. Fast forward to 2017. As Jason points out, and it is important, David Ortiz was retired at that point. And that whole season was a clown show. It was a clown show. And in the month of April, it started with the Machado incident. And let's just have a rehash of Manny Machado here for a second. He flung his baseball bat, tried to fling it at a pitcher, didn't, you know, succeed in that. It actually went down towards Donaldson, third base. And the reason that happened was Abad was throwing at Machado. And the reason he was throwing at Machado was because Machado was hitting Derek Norris in the back of the head with his backswing of his baseball bat. So that's why all that tomfoolery went down. And, you know, there's been other incidents with Machado. If you skip ahead after the Pedroia incident, you had him stepping on first baseman's foot in the World Series, Steve Pierce and Aguilar, or whoever the Brewers first baseman was that series. So this is a bona fide punk, Manny Machado. And then he spikes Pedroia. This was on Friday night in that series against Baltimore. He spikes Pedroia intentionally, making a dirty slide into second base. And on that night, everybody in Red Sox Nation was on fire because Manny Machado was a punk and slid into Pedroia. Saturday goes on without incident, and then you had the Sunday afternoon game. Matt Barnes comes out of the bullpen. I thought Joe Kelly was going to be the guy. I thought Kelly, he throws the hardest, harder than Kimbrel even. I think Kelly that season was like 102 on the gun at times. And I thought Kelly would be the guy to plunk Machado, but it ended up being Matt Barnes. The ball happened to fly up towards, you know, Machado's head. You know, whether that was intentional or not, you know, that's debatable. And then Pedroia had that infamous moment where he's talking to Manny, you know, there it's seen live, and he said to Manny, he goes, "That wasn't me." And he points out to the bullpen and he goes, "It was them." So after that incident, the frustrating part for me was everybody turned on Matt Barnes. Everybody turned on Matt Barnes because when you had the demographic of Red Sox fans calling Pedroia a rat, I was one of them. All the people defending Pedroia were throwing Matt Barnes under the bus when we were all united in hating Manny Machado only 48 hours earlier. And then do you think any of those people, you know, ridiculing Matt Barnes, were they ridiculing Joe Kelly a handful of months ago in the Correa incident? not a lot of them, I can tell you that much. You know, Joe Kelly, everybody loves Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly's awesome. And yeah, so that I didn't like how that went down. And that's when Pedroia lost me. And then when you skip forward to the Eckersley incident, that incident came in two waves. The first wave, it was all David Price. Everybody was getting on David Price and it was a national story. And, you know, it was talked about for a few days and then it kind of went away for about 3 weeks. And then, I don't know, around that was close to 4th of July weekend. And then final week of the month, more details got leaked. And I think it was a Shaughnessy report, if I'm not mistaken, that players on the plane, including Dustin Pedroia, were egging on David Price against Dennis Eckersley. And then the whole thing flared up again. And it was a big story for a few days that led to, it wasn't quite a press conference, but Pedroia, Price had to meet with the media, and the media was asking Pedroia if he was the leader of the team, awkwardly. And Pedroia, it was just an awkward exchange, and then Pedroia finally said, yeah, I'm right here. I'm the leader of the team. Nobody apologized to Dennis Eckersley. It was an ugly incident, and that whole season, you know, was a clown show. And Lou Maloney had the quote of the year. He said, "If this team isn't tough enough to take criticism from Dennis Eckersley, they're not tough enough to win in October." And they won one game against the Astros. The Astros were cheating. Maybe that, you know, that was the trash can season. So, but it wasn't pretty. And then the final game of that playoffs, which ended up being game four, Pedroia has a meltdown in his first at bat, just completely loses it on the umpire. Farrell's job, as far as Farrell knew, was on the line. I think he was going to get fired no matter what, but Farrell comes out to save his player and gets ejected. And the point I'm making with all of this here is, if things weren't going well with the Red Sox and things were going in the wrong direction, Dustin Pedroia wasn't going to be the guy to right the ship because he never did. It never got righted.
How do we know behind the scenes he didn't put out fires? Stuff that didn't pop up. And in my opinion, him sticking up for Price, who's gotten shit on by the media and the fans, that kind of shows some leadership right there, you know, hopping in to defend your teammate. And I admit I'm not the biggest Price fan. I'm not the personal. I just didn't want to spend the money when they did on him. But I think that shows that he's got his back. I don't have a problem with that. And especially the Bobby V stuff. I think we're going to – I don't want to get too sidetracked, but we could see something – similar in Chicago this year with La Russa, because Bobby V was not wanted by the players. It was a pure ownership hire from the managerial spot. And at that point, with the egos that were in that locker room, Adrian Gonzalez at the top of them, I think he was the ringleader. if you guys remember his comment after they had the party on, or probably not party, meeting on John Henry's yacht where they got Beats headphones, he had that famous comment. He's like, well, we can't just eat chicken every night or something like that. We have to eat steak. And Adrian Gonzalez was the leading force behind all that turmoil. I don't put that on Pedroia. If he took a picture, I mean, this is pre-social media media days. It's innocent enough. It just made its way around the team. It's not like you put it on Instagram, put it on Twitter, Facebook.
It was highly publicized, though. You know,
it was. But, I mean, have we seen the picture?
No. There's audio of Pedroia talking about it that you can listen to as well. But
I think those are pretty innocent things.
Well, so here's my thing. I don't mind him sticking up for teammates. I agree. That's what a good clubhouse leader, locker room leader does, even if the player might be in the wrong, right? Because you can't throw your teammates under the bus, even though he had no problem doing that a couple of years later in 2017. But it's the way that he stuck up for the players in during the Bobby V year, and the way he stuck up for David Price, like by heckling Eckersley on the plane. That's not how you stick up for your teammate. If anything, he should have been trying to defuse that whole situation. He shouldn't have been egging Price on. He should have been trying to shut it down and be like, hey, look, you know, let's not do this here. Let's not make a scene on the team plane. If anything, he should have addressed it privately, or even if you come out publicly, hey, look, I think you guys are too hard on David. He's one of our best pitchers. Like, I would have been fine with that. But when the report came out that he was one of the players chastising Eckersley as he's trying to get to the back of the plane on the flight, like, that's childish. That's not what a leader does. That's something that, like, a rookie does. That's something Manny Machado would do. That's not something a clubhouse leader should do. So I had a major problem with that too. Like, it's one thing to consider yourself a locker room leader. It's another thing to, like, act like that. And then when the media presses on, you go, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm the leader of this locker room. Yeah, it's me. It's like, well, no, it's not. Because if you were the leader, you would have diffused that situation. You wouldn't have made it worse. And that's exactly what he did.
It was handled in the worst possible way. It really was. Yeah,
and I think I
do agree. That whole situation was a mess on all parties. It wasn't a situation that needed to happen to begin with. So
no.
I don't know. I think that was just – it was just messy, and there was no good ending to – there was never going to be a good ending to that.
And
look, maybe part of it's on us and the fans and the media. Maybe it's partially our fault for Ortiz retired, and we just looked to the next longest tenured veteran in Pedroia and said, okay, you have to be the leader now, which is a little bit unfair because maybe, you know, I don't think Pedroia has that mentality. He's not a knock on him. It's not for everybody. Like, I don't think Xander Bogaerts has that mentality. I don't think Bogaerts wants to be considered the leader of the clubhouse. I think he wants to go out there, play hard, play his best, you know, help the team win. And that's that. He doesn't want to be, you know, the guy that the media rushes to at the end of the game that crowds around his locker and asks him all the asinine questions that they're going to come up with. I think Pedroia was the same way. I think Pedroia just wanted to go out, play hard, help the team win. And that's that, and keep his mouth shut. And unfortunately, he got labeled as the next leader because there was a void there and he was a veteran and they just picked him. So maybe it's partially our fault, but yeah, he did not handle that situation well at all.
I think that's an amazing point. There's definitely different kinds of leaders when it comes to sports and clubhouses. You got the one that is going to stand in front of the press scrum after the game. And then you have the one behind the scenes where, you know, the players will go to you. And I think Pedroia is the latter there. Even going back to his college days, when he gave up his scholarship to another player. I mean, how many people are going to do that? That's amazing. He doesn't want to be front and center. He wants to be behind the scenes. And I think we kind of all agree on that, where we say we want to see him around the organization, helping out players, helping with their development. So I don't think he wants to be the front and center leader. I do think it's a little unfair. I don't think you need that in baseball, quite frankly, because Varitek was the captain. It doesn't really strike me as a sport where you need to have a de facto captain. You have so many games each season, 162 games. You don't need your, like, PR guy, essentially, taking the reins every single night. I think he can be spread out into a few different roles.
Well, I think in the Eckersley incident, the media was just trying to assign accountability, and that's just how it shook out. And you know, I mean, that incident mostly is on David Price anyway. He instigated it. You know, he waited until Dennis Eckersley got onto a charter plane, an environment that he could not escape from, an environment that he was going to be outnumbered 30-1 or however many people were on that plane. And it went down the way that it did. But I just, and the whole 2017 season, I'm not a John Farrell guy. I knew the whole season. The whole season, it was going to end just the way 2016 did. If we get in the playoffs, Farrell's going to mess it up. And Farrell himself didn't do anybody any favors by promoting, fun, happy-go-lucky environment himself. So, but I'm just not a Pedroia guy. Did he play extremely hard like you guys pointed out? Yeah, absolutely. I can't argue that. And Mariano Rivera said at some point before he even retired, he said, if I had to pick a second baseman on my team, I would pick Pedroia over Cano because he the better defense. What pitcher doesn't want Pedroia behind them? You know, so I'm not gonna dispute that, and I'll even take it a step further. You know, Bogaerts was a dumpster fire defensively, and he worked out with Pedroia, coming into the 2015 season, made a lot of improvements. And I think Pedroia's worked with Devers as well and made some improvements there. So I'll give Pedroia credit for those things, but I'm a huge character guy. And to me, Pedroia wasn't a good leader and had multiple controversies and he lost me. He eventually lost me. And, and that's the way it goes. And I mean, I hated Price. I'm a character guy. I didn't like him. I didn't like Adrian Gonzalez. Like you guys said, he was toxic. The Dodgers wanted him nowhere near the clubhouse in that 2017 run. And then it was awkward. It was awkward that he wasn't there and the media was pointing it out. So he showed up for a few games and then was asked to leave. So even the Dodgers hated him. And, John Lackey, who liked John Lackey before 2013? Basically nobody.
No one.
Yeah.
That was a mess.
The one guy who was a dick that I just couldn't help but like, and I'll admit right now, I know I'm in the minority there, but I was a big Josh Beckett fan. Because unlike David Price, Beckett backed it up in big games. He was a stud.
Did he? But he also took seasons off. And he was the ringleader behind the chicken and beer. And I think he's the one that poisoned John Lester, essentially, that year.
Yeah.
Lester was always on the straight and narrow. And then you have him straying from the pack because Beckett's supposed to be the leader of that staff, and you have him screwing around with Popeyes or whatever it was.
Yeah, and that was, I have no doubt whatsoever he was a huge part of that, the biggest part of that. But I don't know why. I used to love it when Beckett would get on the umpires. He'd be screaming, I had to get four outs that inning, because of a botched call. And I know I'm in the minority, but he was a big game pitcher though, and he pitched in 2008. He pitched Game 6 against the Rays, got the Red Sox into Game 7. Of course, we lost that one, but so like I said, Josh Beckett's probably the only exception for me of guys that had a lot of issues, with character. But typically, I'm not going to like those guys. So another one I hated, I'm probably in the minority with this. I hated Kevin Youkilis. The guy was the biggest crybaby I've ever seen. He would just cry all the way back to the dugout, on a strikeout or whatever. I hated that guy. But anyway.
No, Youkilis messing up Manny after Manny shoved down the 80-year-old clubhouse attendant. Uke will always have a special spot in my heart. I love Kevin Euclid.
He lost a fight to Rick Porcello, though, when he charged the mound. He got beat by Rick Porcello. Yeah.
20 other teams did, too.
I don't know what the hell happened that year. I think Sandy Leone should get that Cy Young, because that was when it all started to turn around. But anyway, so that's where we stand on Pedroia. And, you know, I represented the haters, which is like, according to my poll earlier, like 14% of us or whatever it was. I think it's more, though. I think it's more than that. Not a lot more.
So just real quick, because this might be the one part of this segment where we all unanimously agree. Okay. He's not a Hall of Famer, right?
He is not. Andrew puts us a better chance than...
I think he's going to stick around in the belt. He's not going to be a one-and-done guy. I think he's going to stay on all 5 years. I think he's going to get enough votes every single year to stay on there, to get the debate. He had a dominant 10-year stretch. So I actually have the stats up right here. During his 10-year stretch from 2007 to 2016, his 50.64 ranked sixth in the majors behind Cano, steroids. Beltre should have been in Boston. Pujols, questions there. Miguel Cabrera and Kershaw. Finished the top 10 MVP voting three different times, obviously winning once. So even if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, which I don't think he will, on the voters, he could definitely be a veteran committee guy down the road when the vote comes down to his peers. Because like you said earlier about Rivera, who would I pick? I think he's got the reputation with his competitors, and I think he's gained that respect from those guys around the league. And they don't care about the longevity. They don't care about you ended with X amount of hits. They care about what you did when you got in between the chalk.
Bad postseason numbers, though.
You better hope he's on the ballot long enough for either Shaughnessy to get his membership revoked or for Shaughnessy to just, you know, leave us, because Shaughnessy will never vote for Pedroia. I'll tell you that right now.
No.
He's such a weird voter anyway. He only voted for Jeff Kent this year and nobody else.
Oh, there you go. He might vote for
Pedroia. Which was just so bizarre. But yeah, Shaughnessy will never vote for Pedroia.
He only voted for Jeter last year as well. Yeah, this was, you know, a weak year, though. I mean, you had the steroid guys, so fine if you want to vote for them. You know, and you had Schilling, who got, I think, 70% roughly. But no real, you know, new, you know, people that were going to get there. Anyway.
Really quick on that. Next year is going to be a bloodbath. I can't wait to see what happens. You have, Schilling, Clemens and Bonds on their last year, and then you have David Ortiz and A-Rod in their first year.
I thought Bonds and Clemens were on 10.
Game on the ballot. Oh, are they?
I think so. Yeah, only the Veterans Committee can get them in now. Schilling's got one more, but who knows how it plays out, because he doesn't want to be on the ballot, and you know, he's not going to get in no matter what. So. We'll see. I wonder, can Pedroia get in early? No, well, retroactive to 2020, so I don't know how that works. Last year might be the first year.
No, I think it would be this year would be his first season as a retiree.
Oh, does it work that way? Okay.
I think he didn't
have a game in 2020.
But he was on the active roster, so he got released prior to, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a problem. That does make sense. Yeah, okay. All right, so, we'll just move on. Another big story this week, Nolan Arenado gets his wish and leaves the Colorado organization. He will go to the St. Louis Cardinals, who... You know, they're competitive from time to time, and I don't think their front office is incompetent. But, Andrew, why don't we lead off with you on this one? You know, what were your thoughts on the trade, and is St. Louis going to get a ring with Arenado?
St. Louis has got as good a shot as anyone at this point. I mean, two studs on the corners of those infields. I'm happy for him. I've gone to a ton of games. He did one or five things each game in the field that just make you say, holy crap. And I think we saw that. Did the Red Sox played them 2 years ago at Fenway, and he made just play after play after play in the infield that it just wowed you. And those guys, they don't come around too often. He might – you could make an argument. He's the greatest fielding third baseman of all time. You got your Schmitz and guys like that. But Nolan Arenado has won the Gold Glove every single year he's been in the league. He wins the Platinum Glove every single year. And it's just unfair to the fans out here. They come, they watch him, they buy his jerseys. And then ownership, they don't spend on players. They knock down part of right field and put in a party deck because it can appeal to the 22 to 32-year-olds that go there. Don't even watch the game. Sit at the fire pits. Get absolutely hammered. Rip their vapes the entire game. And meanwhile, you have some generational stars. I mean, you have Arenado. Trevor Story's great. I'm sure there's other guys that I can't even think of off the top of my head that have come through here and just had their careers wasted. And you see the report, he gets traded. Okay, wow, oh, St. Louis also sent them $50 million. Oh, the Rockies sent $50 million along with this first ballot Hall of Fame third baseman? All right. This is – we would – any other sports town would burn the stadium to the ground if you literally paid for the entirety of the first year's salary for that player that just left your team. If we paid Mookie Betts his $27 million for to play for the Dodgers this past year, I probably wouldn't be a Red Sox fan anymore. I would have hung it up. I literally never – I'd just been like, you know what? I'll go out and enjoy my summer nights from now on. Like, I don't have to spend 4 hours watching a game. It's such a disservice what the ownership has done to the fans out there. So I'm embarrassed for them. I wish Arenado the best. I hope we face him in the World Series.
Jason? I know it's not like a thing, but I want Manfred to step in and seize control of the Colorado Rockies and give that ownership to somebody else, because I mean, this alone is egregious enough to warrant it. I don't understand. I literally don't understand any part of this. And like the prospects that the Rockies got back are not all that glamorous. They didn't get a big major prize in this trade. They just kind of got quite frankly, a bunch of Jags that, hey, they might work out, but they probably won't. So that's not great. If you're a Rockies fan, you've got to be so depressed right now, because it's not just that your best player got traded. Okay. Like, to them, I would say, well, welcome to the life of a Red Sox fan. Like, this is what we've had to go through. But at least the Red Sox now, like, you're starting to see, okay, well, there's a little bit of a plan. They can survive without Mookie. They can compete. They can go to a wild card. They've got a core in place that's going to be here for a couple of years. What is the Rockies core going to become? Trevor Story's gone. Like, Trevor Story's out of there. He's either getting traded at the deadline or he's walking. So he's gone. He's one of the best shortstops in baseball. Like, the Rockies had an amazing window with Arenado, Story, David Dahl. I know Dahl got hurt a lot, but he was supposed to be a part of that core. Charlie Blackman, who nobody expected to be any good, turned into a megastar out there. Like, they even picked up Daniel Murphy for free agency. And I know Murphy kind of slumped his last couple of years, but his first year in Colorado, he was actually pretty good. Like, they had the pieces in place. They never had the pitching. And I don't think Colorado will ever have the pitching, which is going to be a massive problem there for pretty much their entire existence. I don't care how many humidifiers or whatever the crap you put in there, the ball's going to fly out of that stadium no matter who pitches there. And free agent pitchers don't want to go there because of it. So that's going to be a problem there forever. But offensively, they had such a great window. They had so many talented young players coming through there. And Arenado was the leader. And like, they just blew it all out. They just were like, well, they didn't come close. I mean, really didn't even come close. It's unbelievable. Like, Arenado's the best third baseman in baseball. and they couldn't do squat with him. Trevor Story is a top five, maybe even top three shortstop, and they didn't do jack. And they're going to lose them both. Hopefully for Story, they're able to at least trade him and get something good in return, because if Trevor Story just walks, or if they do another trade like this where they get nothing in return, forget about it. The Rockies are going to be in baseball hell, like baseball purgatory forever, because they're always going to have pitchers with ERAs in the high fours, mid fives. They're going to have, you know, no offense anymore because Blackman doesn't have many years left. They've already, Daniel Murphy's already retired. He's done. Like, you know, Story will be gone. Arenado will be gone. David Dahl is gone. Who's left? Who do they got? I mean, I'm sure they have some young players in their farm system, but like, do you have the next Nolan Arenado sitting around? Do you have the next Trevor Story just hanging out down there ready to make an impact? Like, it's so bad. They got completely fleeced on the trade, and their window not only got closed, but it got blown up. Like, it's just gone. They have nothing now. They've completely gone back to square one, and they're just going to, you know, Trevor Story will keep them interesting because people still want to watch him. And, you know, Charlie Blackman's still there. But once those two are gone, that franchise isn't going to mean anything. Not just the team itself, but the entire franchise as a whole. They've never won. They've only been to the World Series once, and they got their asses handed to them in a high hat by us. And then they had this incredible window, and they did nothing. They didn't even come close. It's not like you can say, well, if they get the talent again, they'll go back to the NLCS. They never made it there with some of the best players in the league, some of the best players to ever play the game. Arenado is going to be a Hall of Famer. Assuming he stays healthy and keeps going on his track, he's a Hall of Famer. And they just let him go. And they got nothing out of it. They got no championships, no clout out of it, nothing. Like, that franchise is kind of a joke now. It's just a joke. Like, honestly, people love to dump on the Rays because the Rays don't get fans, and oh, nobody shows up to the Trop because it's a toilet bowl of a stadium. But you know what? The Rockies are more of a joke than the Rays. The Rays have at least been to two World Series, and the Rays are competitive every year. I mean, Terry, you said it in the chat earlier. They're going to win 83 games this year. I don't know how. I don't know, you know, how they're going to make it happen, but you can always pencil in the Rays for being competitive. The Rockies, forget about it. They're not going to be competitive going forward. Their 5 to 10 year like plan looks like a joke right now. It looks awful. So if I'm a Rockies fan, like, I'm looking for a new team. I'm looking to change unis and change loyalties, because this is embarrassing.
It's going to be a painful decade for them, for sure. The thing that stands out to me, I mean, everybody knows how bad Arenado wants to win. You know, he's the guy firing up his team in the dugouts during the games. And, you know, Andrew touched on some of the stats. You know, coming into 2020, Arenado had 5 or 6 consecutive top 10 appearances as an MVP candidate. And I think all but one of those were actually top 5, and multiple Golden Glovers. He's just the epitome of a 5-tool guy, you know, one of the greatest players of this generation. And I think his legacy might not be quite as great because he played in Colorado, where nobody was really watching him. And like Jason said, you know, weren't really in the playoffs. So, you know, hopefully for his sake in St. Louis, they will have some playoff runs. That's not looking like a good division this year. You know, I can't see the Brewers. The Cubs probably won't do anything. Reds, Pirates, that should be St. Louis's division to win.
Cakewalk.
Absolutely. Yep. And so, you know, I'm happy he's going to go there, and it's, you know, a storied franchise. So that's good for him. The one real tragedy about everything for Arenado was he was the anti-Mookie Betts when it came to signing an extension. Not only was he willing to do it early, he took a team-friendly deal, 8 years, $255 million. And
a good chunk of change.
It is, but, you know, it's not the automatic 10-year deal that, you know, so many of these guys are looking for, you know, so, and he wanted to stay in Colorado, and, you know, ownership out there did not live up to their end of the bargain. They didn't put a team around him, and it just collapsed. So, you know, it sucks for him.
I was going to say, I totally forgot. They had DJ LeMahieu at second. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You had LeMahieu, Story, Arenado. Are you kidding?
They arguably had one of the best infields in the game with those three. And nothing.
Yeah.
Zip.
And no problem to show for it. Like, it's like, all right, well, at least I got Verdugo. No, they didn't get him. Like, at least we got so-and-so in this trade. Yeah, no, they didn't get him. Like, sell the team, move on. Like, you know, I don't say this much, but I will lose so much respect for Trevor Story if he signs an extension with the Rockies. Because he should be committed. No. If he signs a contract extension with them, like how sadistic of a person would you have to be to put yourself through 8 years of that, winning 45 games a year?
No, he's Trevor Story's got to go. He don't go to the Yankees, but just go somewhere because he deserves so much better. Yeah,
I love the hashtag Story Time. You know, when he has a epic highlight reel. I think that's one of the coolest last names in Major League Baseball. I feel like, but with Arenado, like just from like a Colorado standpoint, it was probably a big mistake for Colorado to not trade him last offseason before the crunch when, you know, the Red Sox got a decent haul. I'm not saying Colorado would have got one like that, but they certainly would have got a better package than what they got this year with the COVID, you know, ramifications, you know, probably hurting it as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right with that. He would have had 2 years guaranteed before his opt-outs, and I'm sure he could have worked something out with them, with it, whatever team he would have went to. Sure, if you threw in an extra year at X amount of money, he would have wiped those opt-outs out. So, yeah, you're right on point right there. You should have traded him. Why wouldn't you? It doesn't make any sense. Where were they going to go? They had no pitching. Their pitching was trash. They had zero hopes of winning anything. I can't even think right now. It makes zero sense why they went into this just knowing they're going to lose an asset. Like, I'm actually worked up about this, and I'm not even a Rockies fan. Just from common sense, it doesn't make any reasonably sane point to let your superstar walk for five prospects that might never see the majors. I literally would never be a fan of that team again.
The Rockies are a masterclass of asset mismanagement because they should have kept LeMahieu, quite frankly. Like, they really should have. They should have re-signed him. They let him walk. He becomes a megastar in New York. They should have traded Arenado earlier than they did. Instead, they let that whole problem fester. They let him get even angrier to the point where he forced his way out, and they got a worse trade because of it. Because the whole league knew he doesn't want to be there. So we're not going to give you our number one prospect for him. We're not going to give you even number two or number three. We're just going to give you a handful of guys. And you have to take the trade because he's not going to play. You have to get rid of him. So they mismanaged that. They're going to mismanage Trevor Story too. They should trade him at the deadline. And you know what? They won't. They won't. You'll hear stories coming out in July. You're like, oh, well, the Rockies are, you know, they've had progressive talks with Trevor Story's agent. And, you know, they believe that they can come to a deal, and then they'll lose him in the offseason too. And he'll walk for nothing, and it'll just be another mismanaged asset. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And with LeMahieu, the funny thing, not to get too off track, but I remember Yankees fans being mad that they ended up with him over Machado. They all wanted Machado. And I was like, and some of them were thinking he was a platoon guy. And I'm like, guys, he won a batting title in 2016. he's going to be more than good. You know, I didn't think he was going to be quite that good. You know, I'm not surprised either. But, you know, definitely a sneaky good move on Cashman, who I love to dump on. But yeah, And so that kind of leads me to my final question on this. Speaking of infielders, what would you rather have? Would you rather make an Arenado deal? And we have the benefit of hindsight now, knowing it wasn't going to be a good deal. But would you rather trade for an Arenado guy or go for a Lindor type guy? And I know their positions are different, but they are on that side of the infield. So which would be the better scenario?
I personally would go for Arenado. I feel like having a guy like that at third base. I know Lindor's been healthy for most of his career, but I look at Arenado and I think that guy's going to be durable. He's a big guy. He's really, really strong, really physically fit. Lindor to me, he's a smaller guy. I look at Lindor and I see the same problem I saw with Mookie Betts, where it's like, okay, how good are you going to be when you get to 33, 34? Are you going to start to decline and get more banged up because you're not a big guy? Arenado, to me, he can have like an Adrian Beltre career where he can perform and he can be, especially at third base. Third base is it's not as physically taxing as shortstop or second base. So I look at him and I think, yeah, he can be just as good as he is now in his age 36, 37 seasons. Whereas I think Lindor by then, he's going to be a diminished asset. So I would much rather have Arenado.
And yeah, it's more cost controlled too. Like, you know what the cost is. That's what I like, but go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah. That unknown is definitely gone there. Whenever you can actually see the ink on the paper, that's huge. Normally I'd be a youth over experience guy there, but I don't see Arenado aging badly. I see him as a Troy Gloss or Scott Rowland. These guys were good, if not better than good, up till their 36, 37 season. And that's where Arenado's contract takes him out there. I was just looking up Scott Rowland right now. He made the All-Star team at age 36, hit 285. It's I don't see any reason why Arenado can't do that. I don't know how their contracts are linked up. I don't know how long Goldschmidt has left on his deal. But they could also flip him over to the other side of the diamond. And if there's any defender I trust to switch positions and be great at it, it's a shortstop turned third baseman in Nolan Arenado, who is one of the best fielders of our generation. I would love to have him on any team. And I think the Mets might have actually done that deal had that opportunity presented itself.
Yeah.
So Goldschmidt's got 4 years left.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's signed all the way through 25. So
I don't know if you guys can tell, but I got an Arizona shirt on. I got this in 2017. I mean, it was just such a likable team that year. And I've always liked Greinke and Robbie Ray. That was the best year of his career. And Goldie was still there. And that's why I bring this up is, Goldie just hasn't quite been what he was in Arizona. I know his second half, though, of 2019 was better. He started to kind of, come back around. But I hope he kind of returns to form because, man, you got two giants on your corners, offensively. And that's got to be really exciting for St. Louis. And I keep thinking, St. Louis needs to go after pitching in the worst way, but in the same breath, I just said, no competition in that division. And there's only so many pitchers you can go after at this point. So hopefully
they figure it out. Is it crazy that no one's mentioned Bauer for them?
Yeah. They're a mid-market team.
Hey, Arenado at time.
Right. Yeah, they just go ahead. I'm sorry.
He can work. I mean, he knows the division.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't see why it can't. And they brought Wainwright back, who had a good 2020, albeit shortened. But yeah, and I don't watch enough Cardinals baseball, obviously, to know how good of a manager Mike Schilt is, but he had one of the most epic clubhouse speeches of all time. It was F-bomb riddled. You can find it. I can show it to you guys later. if you've never seen it. But it was during the playoffs. It was right after they won one of the Atlanta games. I don't know if it was – I think it was the clincher. Yeah, so they won the divisional series. And Mike Schilt was in there dropping F-bombs. And he looks like a nerdy computer repair guy, you know. So I'm not expecting that type of, you know – vulgarity to come out of his mouth. And so I think, you know, from the outside looking in, I think Arenado is probably going to like playing for him. And, you know, so hopefully it works. I know we've faced the Cardinals twice, but I've got no ill will towards them, you know, as long as they're not beating us at our expense, you know.
Yeah.
And I picked them to win the division in 2019. I got 5 out of 6 correct. And I won a bet with one of my co-hosts. I took the Cardinals over the Cubs and won that one. And I also took the Twins over the Indians, and we made a bet on that. So I kind of don't mind the Cardinals that much. But anyway, so we're basically right at an hour. So just kind of briefly, we know for sure now that the season will start. The literally only thing that can prevent it from starting is if local government, you know, municipalities restrict them from playing, if it's too dangerous because of COVID spikes. That's the only way the season will not start on time. And the Players Association and MLB, they briefly discussed another scenario where MLB proposed they would play 154 games starting on April 28th. The season would have went a week later than what it was initially scheduled, and then there would have been a lot of doubleheaders, but the union nixed it. And so it's not looking good for the labor thing because they still seem to hate each other. But, Jason, what are your thoughts on the season starting on time and whatnot?
So I'm glad it's going to start on time. Although I am worried, kind of the point that you brought up with the local governments maybe shooting it down, because I can tell you right now, I don't feel great about Massachusetts being open to the Red Sox playing at Fenway Park. They just opened Fenway as a vaccination center. And I can totally see, as we get closer to vaccinations coming out, I can totally see, you know, Baker being like, look, we're using this as a vaccination center. That's more important than your baseball. So we're not going to, like, Massachusetts has been very ardent about no fans in the stadium, like not even a small percentage, like, you know, and our numbers have been kind of going up and down. They've been a little bit better at the start of 2021. But, you know, given that they just opened that as a vaccine center, I do worry about that. I worry about other cities that have done the same thing. So hopefully that doesn't come into play. Ultimately, though, I'm glad it's starting on time. I'm glad that the players are actually the ones that are gung-ho for that, that they're the ones that are saying, no, we don't want the shortened season. We don't want expanded playoffs or any of that crap again. Just give us a regular 162, give us the normal stuff again, because, you know, that's what they want. I still sense that the two sides are going to fight at some point. There's going to be an argument because that they have the worst labor relations of any professional sports league in the world. So I still think the owners and the players will end up fighting at some point. But for now, I'm optimistic. I'm happy. I want the season to start on time because last year just wasn't fun with the 60 games and the shortened season. Even the expanded playoffs, they were okay, but they weren't really that fun because you saw a lot of squash jobs. So I'm happy for it. I just hope that nothing gets in the way. So only time will tell. We'll see.
Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm excited for baseball. It's been too long since we've seen a good product, and you guys know of anyone, I am cautiously, if not super optimistic for the season. I think they're going to be fun. I really do. I think they're going to have a great clubhouse. So whatever we can do to get spring training started in these 2 weeks, let's do it. I don't care what they have to pull out. Obviously, based the league going to the players right now, asking for them to delay was stupid and not going to happen. Like, all these guys have rented houses. They're already moving all their stuff over. They're moving their families to these spots. Like, it was never a question. We're going to have baseball in 2 weeks, and it's going to be absolutely glorious. People are going to watch Truck Day, and and we're going to get back in the swing of things. We're going to smell the oil of the gloves getting greased up, hear the crack of the bat. I'm so excited right now.
Yeah, and I am too. You know, I kind of said on Twitter, you know, for me, the pandemic is over if baseball is back and we're on a normal routine. And, you know, obviously the vaccinations will continue. Jason, you do make up an interesting point about Fenway being used, and I'm not sure. I don't know if they're going to be vaccinating people on the field, though. Like, so I don't know that both can't necessarily.
It's weird. They sort of just announced it like last week, and no one's really sure what the logistics are yet. Okay. In terms of like how many people are going to be allowed in at what time. Obviously, like most people, like I'm not due to get my vaccination till, well, they say April. So I'm going to say probably it's going to be closer to like June. But even people in Massachusetts are like, what? So why pick Fenway? Because of the great parking? Like it's a little bit weird. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the logistics are of that yet. But all I know is that they were really excited about what they called a large space at Fenway being used for vaccinations. So
yeah. Well, I see how it plays out, I guess. I know with New York, because Boston and New York have been really strict, you know, as far as the you know, COVID restrictions and whatnot. And I know to some extent New York is relaxing some of theirs. You know, they're not like fully opening or anything, but some things are getting loosened up, and I'm guessing could get even more loosened up by the time opening day starts. So maybe, you know, if there's a ripple effect, maybe Massachusetts will as well. So we'll have to see that, how that plays out. I wouldn't be shocked if what if they play the first month in Fort Myers? You know, is that possible? So the luxury they have this time compared to, you know, last March, they've got time to formulate a plan B. And last March, it all went down 2 weeks before opening day, and there was a lot of uncertainty about the virus at that point. And now, you know, we kind of know what the virus is and how to handle it and whatnot. So, I mean, if they need to come up with a plan B, I think it can be done. And just last season, you know, we saw whole schedules getting revamped, you know, and, you know, with the Marlins and the Cardinals especially, so who both made the playoffs after all that drama too. So, you know, so
have they announced the schedule for this season yet?
I think so. Yeah.
No, I saw spring training schedules, but I didn't see regular season.
No.
Okay. So I wonder if we could see a long road trip.
Hang on. No, MLB. I think we start off against the Orioles again, if I'm not mistaken. I think there is a schedule.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let me see. This is good radio. Terry looking up.
Yeah, because I saw the spring training schedule. So that one's fully detailed. But
yeah.
Yeah, okay. And they announced 2,500 fans in each game for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thursday, April 1st. Oh, this has every team playing on that day. So who are we playing? Yeah, we're starting off against Baltimore again. On April 1st. Huh. That's a Thursday.
Yeah. I'm shocked that they would announce that.
Yeah. Okay. And who knows? I mean, they might, you know, have to alter things. But this schedule came out in, like, September or something, or maybe October.
Of all years for them to open at home, I feel like they always open on the road. And this is finally the year that they open at home. Yeah. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
They always seem to open up, like, in Toronto or some stupid crap.
Yeah, you'd think they would try to get teams, you know, as south as possible the first couple mm-hmm. weeks if they can. But yeah, so that is the schedule.
I like that idea you had, though.
What's that?
Send them down and just keep them in Fort Myers. I like that idea.
For a month.
Because you know it's a major league ready. It's not like when you had the Blue Jays going to Buffalo where the lights weren't up to par or whatever they had to be. I mean, it's a full functioning minor spring training stadium. So why not? Just keep the players down there. Avoids travel for another week and a half. I think that could work out pretty well.
Yeah, and they're all in Florida going to be allowed to have fans to some capacity. So there's a revenue opportunity as well for teams to make a little bit of money. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that'll do it, I guess, for this episode. I'm not going to have everybody record on Super Bowl Sunday, especially with Brady in the Super Bowl. So, if anything does happen, then I'll just do, a quick bonus segment, similar. I think I did one a week or so ago. So, we'll just kind of play things by ear, but we are in the same month as spring training now. So about 2 weeks out, for truck day. And for the listening audience, we'll see you as things develop. Take care.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.